All right. Welcome, everyone, to this meeting of the Expanded Budget Committee. It's our second meeting, but the first one at which we will have official presentations. And I don't really have any opening comments except to say that I'm always happy to see Joe Mariano, whether in person or virtually. Hi, Joe.
It's so nice to be back.
Thanks for being here. All right, so first up, we have our county historian, Carol Kamen. Carol, take it away.
Thank you so much. I'd like to thank the legislature for restoring the historian's budget. The county historian's office is ready for work. It has not been used during the pandemic, and it's time for us to think of a new era. The county historian takes care of the celebration committee with the help of the planning board, and money for that celebrations has been restored, some of it. The county historian also leads the Municipal Historians of Tompkins County, which is a group of the appointed historians, those who care to come. There are a few who don't, and a lot of people who are not appointed but who care about history one way or another and join in our discussions. And the third major thing the county historian does, as far as you're concerned, I think, is I lead the historical commission that you established in 2019. And I'm not sure what you had in mind for the county the historical commission, but we have looked around and talked and discussed what is needed. And we think there is a need, and we have been promoting good research, and we have been publishing pamphlets. And I trust that you have at least one of the three that we've already published. We're interested also in making history visible. So we have honored those people who have pushed past societal bounds in order to try to make this a better place, such as the suffragettes and the abolition. And we're working on the abolitionists and those who worked in the following the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850. But we're also interested in the writers. A number of composers who were born here and lived here, and also the teachers and maybe even the legislators. Who knows? We're hoping to show that people here have come together to make this a better place and to make this a community. And that's what we're all about. And I would be happy to answer any questions.
Carol, would you like me to go through the numbers really quickly?
Absolutely.
Yeah, let me just, this is a small budget, and so we'll go quickly through the numbers. This is a rather busy chart for such a small budget, and you can see the activity that's occurred over the last year or two. I try to simplify that a little bit to make it more understandable. And as a part of that understanding, as you look through your budget document, you'll see the historian's budget is really in two parts. One is the stipend for the historian, and the second is an allocation for the activities of the historical commission. So I'll just go through those breakdowns very briefly. First, to the historian. In 2021, the legislature understandably reduced the stipend available to the historian to $5,500. Additionally, that stipend has been $7,500. So as a part of the 2022 recommendation, that stipend has been restored to the pre-pandemic level. But just as it has always been, that stipend is fully covered by room tax revenues. In both years, it was fully covered, as it has been in the past. So there's no local that goes along with this. There's no property tax effect of the historian's budget. The second part of the consolidated budget is the commission itself. 2021 was an unusual year. There was a large allocation, and you'll see in a second, mostly of rollover money, to allow the commission to take on a number of projects that had taken a while to incubate. The commission has been around since 2018. A lot of projects were in progress, and in 2021, funds were made available to allow those to happen. And as you see in this slide, almost all of that allocation was funded with rollover money, amounts that had been unspent in prior years while these projects were incubating. The other 4,400, and again, this is in 2021, was supported with one-time money. So as you can see, in 2021, a fairly large budget, no local impact. In 2022, the administrator has recommended what we had requested, which is a traditional allocation of $5,000. That's the normal funding level for the commission. But rather than funding it with one-time money, we have asked for, and the administrator has recommended, that it be funded with ongoing target money. This has been, call it a recurring one-time item for several years, and we have asked for and it's been recommended to make that now a small target of $5,000. And that's the OTR. So the OTR consists simply of raising last year's commission activities budget from 4,400 to 5,000 and to fund it with target dollars as opposed to one-time dollars. In terms of what can be funded with that money, first of all, what has been, Carol talked about these. Carol, I don't know if you want to quickly go through those in the remaining time that we have.
Sure. We have published Living in Tompkins, which we know you all have a copy of, and I hope you've all read the second essay for sure, because it explains how the county legislature came into being and what it does. Permanent residence talks about people who've been buried here and are permanently with us. Political Tompkins will be out in a couple of weeks, and it talks about how Tompkins County has voted since 1828, and there are some surprises in that. We have a brief history of the Cayuga people, the Gaiahodo, and we have suggested that we also bring out a children's version. The brief history is written by Kurt Jordan, and it's a very scholarly, interesting account of the Cayuga people and where they are now today. And it's I found it tremendously enlightening. And then we have Explaining Tompkins, which we have reprinted because there has been such a great demand for it, which means I've handed it out to all of you and a lot of other people. We've also engaged in, we've created signage for Cayuga Street in indigenous language and colors, and we have plans with the city that those signs will go up sometime in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And Cayuga Street in Ithaca and Cayuga Street in Trumansburg and Cayuga Street in Groton will all have signs. We also are doing a number of other things. We have a publication we're ready to publish but don't have the money for, so we'll do it in 2022. Diversity in Tompkins, about the various groups of people who came here, how they were received by those who were already here, and what diversity has meant to this community. And we are putting up the Cayuga signage, and we are thinking of other ways of honoring people who have made this a better place for us. I think the point of all of this is that our local history is what brings a mobile people together with education and information and laughter. It's not about firsts. It's how we've gotten on despite differences. It's about the better side of our characters while acknowledging our faults. The past was not a better place. It is what we have lived through to discover common ground, democracy, opportunity, along with joy and laughter. It's where beauty can inform us, even in darkness, and division, which is always a possibility. I would like to thank the county legislature for being willing to support and for encouraging this activity and for being willing to listen to what we have to say. We know it is not so everywhere, and we appreciate your efforts because this is what makes Tompkins County a very special place for all of us.
Thank you, Carol and Joe, for that very cogent explanation. And thank you for all the good work that you're doing, you and the commission. I see a hand from Martha and Mike.
Hi, Carol and Joe. I want to say that, Carol, the smartest thing you ever did was to bring Joe onto the commission.
Right. So,
a question about, in the budget book, it calls these, it considers these expenditures both target. Is there a way, is it clear, let me back up, do the project monies and the stipend both come from tourism, from room tax money?
Joe, do you want to do that?
Yeah, no. The historic stipend does. The commission's activities does not. The program expenses does not.
Okay. All right, that sounds great. Makes a lot of sense to just make that target. So I appreciate the proposal and the administrator accepting that.
Thank you.
Hi.
Thank you, Joe and Carol. Carol, how long has it been that the $7,500 stipend has been at that level?
Oh, dear. It's about 10 years, Mike. It started out at 1,000, and then it went up to 5,000, and then sometime about 10 years ago, I've been county historian since 2000, so it's about 10 years ago it went up to 7,500.
I'd just like to say that we certainly get an awful lot of work out of our county historian for very little money, and that's room tax money. And since in the last few years, we've added to your knapsack of things to do by making you chair, asking you to chair the historical commission, which you do very well. I personally think that it's time for that to be going up, and I will possibly suggest that as an amendment when we get to voting.
Thank you. I think we have to think about the future. I won't be here forever. And at a certain point, we really do need to think about someone else doing it. And I think that will be a great help in getting the very best person.
Okay, thank you. Is there anything else for Carol or Joe? If not, thank you both, and we will move on to...
Thank you all.
We'll see you tomorrow night, by the way.
Yes,
we'll
thank
there.
You all.
Okay, nice. All right, so now we move on to the Pinsky Center, which you can find at page 5-10 of...
Good afternoon. Can folks hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Hi. So for those of you who I know most folks, but I'm Benjamin Sandberg. I'm the director of the History Center, and I appreciate the opportunity to come chat with you all today. I know that we were just here at the beginning of June sharing our History Forge project. So thanks for putting up with me twice. I appreciate it. So this is what's coming from the recommended budget, which is a carryover from what was funded last year, being held steady at the same amount. This was reflecting the cuts that were part of the COVID-19 impacts. So the recommended budget is held steady through 2022. This is roughly 12% of the History Center's total income, so it does make up an appreciable support for us. We have 5 full-time staff positions here. We did lose one during COVID-19, at this point, I don't have enough certainty in predicting the future of whether we will be able to reinstate that position. Your support makes a couple of things possible for us, or really, there we get a support from the county in a lot of ways, but specifically here, this allocation helps with the long-term preservation and care of our archival and object collections, and then the services of a professional bookkeeper, which has made a substantial difference, especially in the last couple of years. This also sustains the county's historic report support, which dates back into the 90s, if not longer, for our organization. Goodness, I think one of my slides here. So we have seen roughly a 40% loss in our projected income during the COVID-19 crisis over the last 18 months. We've been really quite successful at replacing that income through short-term solutions. It's really been piecemealing funding sources together. This includes the Payroll Protection Program, federal and state relief grants and programs, and piloting some new fundraising ideas. I would really be remiss if I did not vocally acknowledge that we would not be here today, really, without the support of the National Endowment for the Humanities, the National Archives and Records Association, the New York Humanities, and then locally the Triad Foundation as well, that all of them have come through in a number of ways to sustain the History Center. We've, in sort of shocking and through what seems like a healthy dose of a mixture of luck and skill, we've managed to maintain a positive bottom line through the pandemic. We reopened in the fall of 2020, and we continue to welcome visitors to the exhibit hall and the research library. We were at about a quarter visitation rate through last April. Subsequently, our visitor rate is jumped, and that has been especially evident once we opened up our new exhibit. Our numbers have really been quite high for museum levels during the pandemic. We still have capacity limits in place and operational guidelines that continue to adapt to local health guidance. We've also seen some demographic shift in our visitor makeup, so a lot more folks are coming from in-county and our surrounding counties than before. And some of that, I'm sure, reflects travel trends and characteristics, but we have also found that our the usage of our research library and a lot of the services that we provide locally are getting picked up and used a lot more frequently. Some brief COVID program highlights, you know, that bottom one there, we presented on History Forge. We're still in the process of expanding that to a number of municipalities outside of Ithaca. I won't belabor that point too much. We did launch in the past year two new archival initiatives. Our COVID-19 collection has really grown, and we've recently had some folks from Columbia University and other places reaching out to us to ask if they can fold our local collection into a broader efforts of documenting COVID-19. And then the other one that we really have pushed this past year is our Black Lives Matter object and archival collection. Both of these are examples of our obligation as an institution to preserve and steward a historical record for future generations. We see the types of questions folks are coming to us asking and wanting to know about our past to inform projects today. And we are very cognizant of that. Yes, we are serving and providing a platform for people to explore local history now, but really we are building and stewarding this collection on behalf of the community for future generations. We opened a brand new exhibit at the beginning of July. If you haven't had a chance to come down, I would encourage, whether you're one of our legislators or watching the proceedings here, we'd love to have you down at the museum. Breaking Barriers, Women's Lives and Livelihoods. It uses the 100-plus-one-year anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment to explore the way women have championed change here in Tompkins County. I trust that everybody knows why we're celebrating the 100-plus-one-year anniversary. We've adapted our programs to meet in a bunch of different ways, from our outdoor and resource-guided cemetery scavenger hunts If you haven't seen them yet on our social media, we're sharing a video series we developed with Perry Ground and the local Daughters of the American Revolution to celebrate Constitution Week and the Haudenosaunee impact on the founding fathers, and then adapted programs to meet more frequently in smaller groups so they can be social distanced. But that last point here before I turn over for some questions is that the emphasis on our work really remains on providing platforms and opportunities for the community to connect and explore their local histories. We aren't here to provide a definitive answer, but instead to guide folks through connecting and exploring to their past. I want to thank all of you for the support and flexibility over the last 18 months. It's really made a difference during some really uncertain times for museums, and where our whole team here is deeply appreciative of the ongoing support, because the short term is going to remain uncertain. So with that, I will turn it over. I'm sure there are some questions from some of the legislators.
Thanks, Ben. It's nice to be appreciated. Does anybody have any questions for Ben? Mike does.
Ben, we've been in the Tompkins County Center for History and Culture a couple of years now. How's that enterprise coming along with all the different not-for-profits? Is it working out?
Yeah, great question. I won't speak for everybody, but that I know it has, being in the TCHC in this new collaborative center, I think I still get to call it new, this new collaborative center made a huge impact when COVID-19 hit, that I would really be worried about what would have happened if we hadn't had this home base. It has spurred a lot of cross-institution collaborations from our work with the Dorothy Cotton Institute, developing both in-person and virtual exhibits and programs around the life of Dorothy Cotton. We've got some really exciting stuff cooking up with Discover Cayuga Lake, and that it seems by having the regular interface between the partners, it has really helped spur creative cross-programming. Personally, I would also say that the emotional support during the past 18 months, 24 months from the other partners in the building also made a difference for me as a young executive director. Did that answer your question, Mike? Did you have something more specific?
Yeah, that helps. So, we know what's going on over there, but we don't get to see it day to day. So it's good to hear.
All right. Thank you. Does anyone else have a question? All right, thanks, Ben. I guess
my pleasure.
Move along to Ithaca Area Economic Development, and I assume that's going to be Heather. Hi, Heather.
It is. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for the opportunity, and I, too, very much appreciate all the support, not only financially, but in other ways that the legislature provides. Let me share my screen here. Okay, how's that look? Everyone can see that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So our recommended budget from the county legislature this year would be $224,768 with an over target request of $40,969. The total county contribution supports about 22% of IAED's budget. And here's the over-target request. The reason that we have added this into the budget this year is to restore funding that the county had pledged as part of a five-year MOU to Ithaca Area Economic Development covering the years 2019 to 2023 that we then went out and were able to secure funding from investors, businesses, and other community organizations that believe in our mission. So again, just getting us back up to where that we should have been in that five-year agreement had the pandemic not reduced our the county's commitment to IAED and the work that we do. As a reminder, our mission, we're dedicated to building a thriving and sustainable economy that improves the quality of life in Tompkins County by fostering the growth of business and employment. We've been around since 1964, and we take very seriously our mission and our vision of a flourishing economy with exciting, innovative firms that inspire and attract a talented workforce. Some of the direct services that we are, some of the things that we do at IAED, primarily direct services to businesses. We want to run a pretty robust business retention and expansion program where we develop relationships and meet on a very regular basis with major employers to better understand their needs. It informs all of the work that we do and all of the services that we provide. We are stepping up to do more in the area of workforce development, working directly with area employers to make sure that they have all the resources that they have at their fingertips so that they can stay and grow in our community. And of course, our signature programs that we manage directly are the, we administer the Tompkins County IDA, the Development Corporation, and a revolving loan fund for businesses. We provide strategic planning for the county this past year, in addition to monitoring the countywide economic development strategy and implementation items there. We also prepared an economic recovery strategy, working with all of our partners in the community, and really spent a lot of time looking at ways that we could move our economy forward to support increases in tax base, sales tax, room tax, and all those good things that when those are functioning and increasing, you're able to support other kinds of things in the community with those dollars. We provide economic development leadership on behalf of the businesses in our community, not only locally, but at the regional level with the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council, at the state level, nationally, and also internationally. I will be at the International Economic Development Council in 2 weeks. Presenting to, you know, 1,000 of my closest friends around the country and the world about all of our efforts to support affordable housing in our community. And then, of course, with that, we do marketing and communications to get the word out and spread the word out about what a great place Ithaca is to live and to work. Some of our priorities that we have worked on over the course of 2021, of course, tracking economic impact data, lots of workforce data to better understand how things are changing in our economy on sometimes a daily basis. That economic recovery strategy, which I also already mentioned, doing more marketing and branding and awareness activities outside of our market and outside of our region to do a little bit more in terms of not only business attraction, but also talent attraction. We've launched a targeted talent attraction campaign to help some of our key sector businesses attract mid-level and specialized positions that go unfilled for several months or even years on end, which really impacts their ability to stay and do business here. We have started a manufacturing employer sector partnership really aimed at working with those sector employers to have them drive new programs that meet their needs, specifically in the areas of transportation for their employees, entry-level workforce training programs, and marketing the manufacturing sector as a viable career opportunity for young people in our community. We have been working over the past year or so on developing an Ithaca Technology Business Center where we could form a cluster of businesses, either local businesses that are growing out of their existing space or even attracting other businesses that would benefit from shared space and the ability to work closely together if being located in the same space and working in the same kind of sector. Really working with our businesses to understand their needs and make sure that their needs are met here so that they're not relocating to do business somewhere else where the grass always looks greener. And then, of course, working on the broadband issue. We've got this grant to develop a broadband line up through Lansing that we will continue to work on. As we start to look at our 2022 priorities, some of the things on this list will continue to be priorities for us. I can't say it enough. Workforce, workforce, workforce. I think that's what my dog might be saying in the background. As well as working with businesses to make sure that they're able to start here, stay here, and grow here. In our 5-year goals for 2019 to 2023, we've been tracking how we've been doing in terms of the projects that we've worked on, the businesses that we have delivered direct incentives to. In the past 2.5 years, we have seen $552 million in new private capital investment as a result of the projects that we have worked on. Those projects project adding $21.5 million in new payroll, 325 new jobs, and retaining over 1,000 jobs. Definite return on investment for investing in the work that Ithaca Area Economic Development does. We are a nimble team of five, and I thank you each and every day and each and every one of you for your continued support of the important work that we're doing to make sure that our economy is as vibrant and prosperous. It's a place where people want to live and people can work. So I'm happy to take questions.
Thanks, Heather. Let's see who's got a question. Martha.
Hi, Heather. Thanks very much for the presentation. You said at the beginning the county provides, I can't remember what percentage of IAED's budget. What was the?
It's about 22%.
22%. You also are asking for about $41,000, and with that you'll be able to hire a new person. I assume you must be putting other resources to bring a full-time person on board, is that right?
Yes. When we did our 5-year strategy and we looked at our budget for the 5-year period, 2019 to 2023, we budgeted out adding that 6th staff person to focus solely on workforce development. In 2020, which we did hire that person, we had to let that person go as a result of COVID. It just was not the right timing to be increasing that activity from our perspective. We have not been reduced in funding by our investors and our fees for services. So, you know, the $40,000 from the county, while it may not seem like a large amount of money, I just can't make the numbers work to keep that, to add that staff person back in. We did this year, we used some of our, I would call it a little bit of a budget surplus to invest a little bit more in some of our priority activities. Because we had that little bit extra money. But if we're able to get that additional $40,000, it makes our budget whole in that we can add a 6th staff person.
Thanks very much.
Are there any other questions? Henry has his hand up. Okay, Henry and then Michael.
Yes, thank you for the report, Heather. So I assume that the biggest issue with business retention is the attraction of talent?
No, it's filling open positions. There's, you know, significantly right now, there's lots of supply chain issues. There's other kinds of issues as well. But when you go talk to a business, you know, 100% of the time they say, I can't find employees. I can't find people with the right skills. So, you know, we're looking at it on several levels. One would be attracting talent into the community, even from outside the region or within our labor market area, but also looking at ways that we can connect with employers and connect with the workforce system to provide pipeline training programs into some of those, in-demand occupations.
Thanks.
Mike.
Hi, Heather. Thank you for your presentation. Other municipalities in Tompkins County are members. What level are they at, and how many are there?
The city of Ithaca invests in our mission, and I believe the town of Dryden, the town of Lansing. And I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. It's not, you know, nearly as significant as an investment as the county.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Shauna. Hi there. I was wondering if there had been any conversation with TC3 in regards to collaboration with workforce.
Yes, the client committee that is working with the manufacturing employer sector partnership includes two representatives from TC3 and two representatives from the Workforce Development Board.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, well then I've got something I'd like to talk about. Heather, I know you and I have gone back and forth about this workforce development person I desperately want you to have. Ever since I got on the legislature, I'm happy to see that the $40,000 that the county administrator has allocated to you in an OTR will enable you to hire that person. I would say that since economic development and business retention and attraction is one of IAED's top goals, you would desperately need a workforce development person because that seems to be a major problem for businesses right now, exacerbated by the pandemic. And I know we've heard from you for years that local businesses bemoan the fact that it's so difficult to find people to fill the jobs they have. All of which is to say, I do hope we'll see this workforce development person join your staff soon. And I myself will be watching closely. I'm looking forward to that. Thank you.
Thank you for your vote of confidence, Deborah.
Don't disappoint me, Heather.
I aim to please.
Okay, thanks, Martha.
In the past, sometimes we have kind of enabled, allowed departments to accelerate hiring somebody. Let's say, you know, if we know in October or November that we really want something to happen, we've said, go ahead and, you know, advertise for the job and, you know, we're going to fund it. We want to make sure you get a jump start on bringing that person in. Is that something? I mean, IAD is not a county department in the same way. I wonder if that's the sort of thing is there any signal we can provide or, you know, assurance we can provide that if Heather goes ahead to start, that Heather might go ahead and start to recruit that person. I wonder if that's something.
That's an excellent suggestion, Martha. I would defer to Lisa if there's a mechanism for us to do that.
Well, I would say once the budget is adopted, then the funding would be assured starting in January. So that would enable one to post and, you know, start recruitment efforts to get someone on board to start in January. That's one idea.
Yeah, as soon as the budget is passed, I will be ready to go to start advertising for this position. And if I find the right candidate and they're able to start before the end of the year, I will pinch pennies out of this year's budget and find a way to bring that person on board.
That sounds great. Okay, thank you.
Excellent. Thanks, Heather. Does anybody have anything else for Heather? All right. Have a lovely evening, Heather.
Thank you. You as well.
Okay. All right. So next up, we've got Workforce New York Employment and Training. That's on page 4-228 of your books. And I don't know who we have for that. Announce yourself, please. Do we have a presenter, or are we that much ahead of schedule?
Well, it's Jackie, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't. Jackie, we can't hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, so for some reason, my laptop wasn't working, but we have my presentation up now. We're just switching here, switching gears. So Jackie Muyeso with the Office of Employment and Training and Workforce New York. So I have a short and sweet presentation for you this evening. And hopefully you're able to see my presentation now.
Yes, okay. We are.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks for bearing with me. So essentially, as you're looking at the recommended budget, what you can see is just a fairly minimal change from 2021 to 2022. We are not requesting any over target requests, and we are requesting a slight increase in our budget of $128,000, which reflects about an 11.5% increase. So what this means is, of course, we're not asking for an over-target request. We are fortunate to not have to do that. I certainly feel for all of our colleagues and departments that do need to do that. We are fortunate this year that we don't have to do that. We have unspent money from 2020, and we have new funds from 2021. That are allowing us to make up that increase in the budget. What this applies to is essentially a full-time position and a part-time position. Our core funder fortunately allows us to spend over a two-year period, and that's why we end up in a situation this year where we don't have to ask for an over-target request. I think another thing that I would just make note of on that front is that while we're not making an over-target request, we are still increasing our staffing capacity to meet some of the needs that other folks have referred to. And one of those things is the increase in demand for employers locally, for needing assistance, you know, finding qualified candidates, hiring qualified candidates, and then being able to retain staff. And that's something that Workforce New York feels that we can contribute to and support employers with, as well as continuing to support job seekers through the work that we do every day. Thank you. And then lastly, this is just a reflection of the full-time equivalents. So based on this picture from 21 to 22, it doesn't look like we're increasing by a full-time staff person because this only actually references the full-time equivalents that we had last year. We had an additional person listed, but that was not included in our budget, and we are now including them in our budget this year. So again, The budget reflects a difference of $128,000, which primarily covers the cost of a full-time staff person and a part-time staff person. Do you have any questions for me?
Does anybody have a question? Martha?
Hi, Jackie. I'm just wondering if you're having people come into the office yet, or are you still completely remote?
We are still remote on the adult side of our services, and again, because Department of Labor requires that our office still remain closed to the public, the Department of Labor holds the lease on the Career Center space, and so it is determined by Department of Labor as to whether or not we're able to have the office open to the public. However, on the youth side of our programming, we have been on the ground, with the exception of a couple of months in the early part of the pandemic, we have been on the ground and in the field steadily. Our office has been closed, but our staff have been out at work sites, out working in the field with partner agencies and with our youth. We just actually wrapped up a summer youth employment program. In between that and our year-round youth employment program, served about 85 youth in work placements across Tompkins County. So we're very active still, and again, on the adult side of programming, full on with services virtually, by phone, by email. And when we are able to, we are meeting with folks in conference rooms and in areas of the public in order to take care of paperwork and so forth. So trying to ensure that anyone who needs our services can tap into them, despite otherwise being accessible only virtually.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Anyone else? Henry has his hand up.
Thank you.
Henry, and then Mike.
Yes, thank you, Jackie. I was wondering whether you've seen, well, basically, what have you seen in terms of your outreach, whether you've seen it growing recently or whether you've seen it still underperforming, essentially?
I missed the one key word. What?
Yeah, basically, how many people have you been outreaching to? I mean, you said you've been out in the field. Has the field increased or has it stayed pretty low?
I would say that it's staying pretty low. We're doing a fair amount of outreaching in a number of different pockets, and particularly targeting marginalized populations and groups within the county. While we certainly have people showing up to those virtual meetings and virtual events, we have fewer people tapping into workforce services in terms of job seeking services, anything from resume, cover letter, interview prep, you know, labor market information, the standard services that we provide. We are not seeing the influx that we anticipated at this time.
So that begs the question of why are you adding another person? Because if you don't have enough work to keep everyone busy, why do you need another person?
So I think, Henry, you know, my answer to that is really that we see the need there, and we also have a lot of questions about why people have left the workforce. I mean, if employers are demanding and they need people to work in order to continue business operation and organizational operation, then there are missing pieces. I think we need to be able to get to those people, and I agree with you that it begs questions, but from our end of things, we see that as harder work. It means we have to do more to find the people who the employers need to be working and who have stepped out of the workforce, essentially. And I think we also have to meet with employers and help them identify potentially new strategies for creating workplaces that are conducive to inclusivity, that are meeting the needs of people who are facing systemic barriers. We know that as a result of the pandemic, people who have formerly been marginalized are even further marginalized. And what we think is that, to some degree, that's equating to people stepping out of the workforce. So we think we have a role to play in educating employers about creating workplaces that indeed support people facing systemic barriers, And we think that's going to take more time to do, both, you know, working collaboratively with employers and also working with job seekers and figuring out what the real answers are as to why job seekers are stepping out of the workforce.
Thank you.
Sure. You're welcome.
Mike?
Thanks for the presentation. When you mentioned about the Department of Labor having the leads, I remember it was, I think last year or the year before, they presented your department with a stiff increase in the lease payments. Has that stabilized? Did you just have to suck that up? Was it negotiated? Where did that end up?
It is still in negotiation, actually.
Goodness.
Okay. All right. So I have a couple of questions, and this is the most important one. How do you pronounce your last name?
It's Mulieso. Mulieso.
Mulieso. Okay, thank you. Okay, so this other one is kind of important as well. I look at the pages in our budget book. And page 224 is the Workforce Development Board, and page 228 is the Workforce New York Career Center. And in both cases, it shows zero funds coming out of NetLocal. So maybe this is a question for Lisa. I'm not sure. I know once upon a time, Anna had people come to PDAC and try to explain to us how these two organizations are funded. But I'm still not understanding. If we're not contributing anything, why are y'all here? And if we are, yeah.
I would just note that the county does provide about 10% of the Office of Employment and Training's budget annually. And so there is certainly county contribution, although we do rely heavily on other funding sources, state and federal primarily, for operations of several different funding streams, about 11 different funding streams that we facilitate through all of our programs and services. But the county does contribute about 10% to that.
Okay, so maybe Lisa can tell me where that shows up in the budget.
You know, Deborah, you bring up a really good point, and this is something I think we're going to have to look at and get back to you, because I am seeing in the budget book a net local of zero. And
right.
I need to look back and understand if that was a software issue or if that is actual. So let us get back to you on that, and we'll look into that, because that doesn't seem right.
Okay, thanks, Lisa. It didn't seem right to me either, but anyhow, I appreciate the fact that that wasn't a totally stupid question. There you go. All right, so we can move on now to Workforce Development Board, which is on page 4-224 of your books, everybody.
Thank you.
Jackie, are you going to report on that as well, or are we getting somebody else?
Rosemary's jumping in, and Diane.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I just had a little technical difficulty. We have to switch places, but we're both in the same room. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Rosemary Avalon. I'm here with Diane. I am the current interim director for Workforce Development Board, and we will be presenting our budget for this year. So.
Okay, see, we're waiting on your slides, and I have a request for you to speak up, because your soft little voice is not.
And I couldn't hear Diane.
Sorry, we do have to wear a mask.
I couldn't hear Diane last night.
Could you hear us now?
Yeah, just make sure to speak kind of slowly and a little louder than you usually do.
Sure.
And Martha says she didn't hear Diane's last name.
Diane
Aculus.
Aculus.
Thank you.
Sorry, it just looks like so. Can everyone see?
Oh, there it is. No, we've Okay, now it's going to come across. Yeah, there it is.
Thank you. Sorry about that. I was switching. So our budget for this year, so we are requesting $603,651, and our over target is $34,183. So we have a loss of two grants that we'll be talking about shortly, and the reason why we're asking is because we have lost the DEI, which is a Disability Employment Initiative grant, which is approximately $30,000, and the TTNDGWG, which is a Trade and Economic Transitional National Dislocated Worker Grant, which is about $4,000. So that brings us roughly of a request of over $34,000. And I will pass it over to Diane, turn it over to her. She's going to explain to you a little bit more about the full-time equivalents.
So we're staying with our 3.85 that consists of a director, a deputy director, a youth service associate, and an 85% admin coordinator. So we have no change in our full-time equivalents. So our over-target request is to cover the loss that we had last year from the cuts and our loss of the two grants this year, to cover the balance of the wage and fringe for the current administrative coordinator, and then to be able to reclass the administrative coordinator next year to a fiscal coordinator. And then the second part of the $3,800 would be to compensate for the rest of the funds that we need to cover for like travel and training and things that we lost from the two grants that also terminated as of this year, September 30th.
Yeah, and to just clarify, the 3.85 is because Diane is 85% of the time working for the board and 15% of the time working for the Office of Employment and Training. And then the three other positions would be for the director, deputy director, and youth services associate. And that's it for our presentation. We're happy to answer any questions.
Okay, Amanda has a question.
Well, I'm finding a weird thing in my book where I have two page 220.
Recording in progress.
or at least the page 225, there's two of them and they're different. But you just said your FTEs are 3.85.
Yes, correct.
The second page, 225, says something different. So,
yes. Go ahead, Lisa.
If I could, Amanda, this was one department where we had to make last minute corrections. So you probably didn't get a page taken, the wrong page taken out. So that the page that you referenced that doesn't say 3.85, if you could take that out and recycle it. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. I thought I was losing my mind.
No. That's probably what happened.
Martha has a question?
Yeah, I'm interested in, I guess it's also for Jackie. The federal legislation that is being, you know, debated hotly right now, do you have any projections for what kind of workforce funding is going to be available? Are you tracking those bills?
So we think that most of them is going to be for maybe on-the-job training and soft skills training, which is a high demand in all sectors. That is something that we are hearing constantly from employers, and that HR is expressing in different industries where they run into great candidates, but they do lack the soft skills training. So it would be something for the soft skills training and on-the-job training. There's also a program called Earn and Learn, where employers could be attending these soft, soft skills training and at the same time earning at least minimum wage for that. So it's into that direction. It's making sure that there's enough people ready for the workforce and for those job seekers.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's hope they pass.
I hope so too.
Does anyone else have any questions? Lisa, I think this is another case where maybe some clarifications needed. I noticed on page 4-227, it indicates that the two OTRs were just mentioned are being recommended to come out of interfund revenues. What are those?
So Diane, who is in the admin coordinator title, she is shared between the two offices. So there is some interdepartmental transfer between Workforce Development Board and Workforce New York Career Center. So that should account for the interfund revenues.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? All right. Thank you, ladies. We appreciate your attendance and your presentation and your good work.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, we have transportation planning. That is on page 4-211 of your book. And we have Dwight. Hi, Dwight.
Hi.
Nice to see you.
Well, it's a pleasure to see you. A lot of little squares, but it's very nice.
Like Hollywood squares.
Exactly. Let me share my screen. Okay. Transportation planning. The budget, well, first let me get control of my screen here. All right. The total expenditure and revenues are less than last year, but we have come in at what the budget target is, and we have no requests. We have no over target requests in terms of what makes up the budget. 79% of it, $517,000, are contracted services where the county is contracting with mobility providers. And our largest contract actually is for the Way to Go program with Cornell Cooperative Extension. And the balance of it, the balance of the funding of $138,000 is admin, which is everything else. So I will just say that 2021 has been an exceptional grant year. We processed all of the three grant awards that were made by the federal government. The CARES Act, which came in 2020, that we processed in fall of 2020. And the CRISA Act and the American Rescue Plan, which we submitted under the wire before the federal government closes to change its books for the start of the new federal fiscal year. All the same, we also receive allocations of regular FTA urban formula funding of about $2.3 million per year, which we anticipate will remain stable in 2022. We assist we assist TCAT with competitive grants. We expect that the New York State Transit Capital Funding Program for TCAT to remain stable. And there are always announcements for new funding that we will work with any of the mobility operators to pursue funding for pilots and so on and so forth. And we are planning to reserve $500,000 in FTA American Rescue Plan or the CRISA funds to meet expenditures for COVID-related transportation services by the county and to be able to access those funds through 2025. And this is a priority. I've been part of the team dealing with the COVID-related transportation issues as they began to surface back in 2020 up through 2021, and was involved in some of the more unique services that we had. So, for example, in the spring of this year, the county used some CARES Act funding to support 404 county residents to take our bus to Binghamton to the state vaccination site there. And they were able to do that. And we had a special arrangement with our bus to enable that to happen. So that succeeded quite well, actually. In addition to grants, I have two projects I just want to really highlight. One is Gadabout has an IT intelligence technology project that will begin operating in February 2022. And it will completely reorganize operations, how people reserve trips. It will provide real-time bus information where their buses are located. The types of customer information they're going to be able to provide, giving everybody a 5-minute heads up that the bus is on the way and will be ready to pick them up. And it's a very exciting project. It's taken about a year and a half to bring to fruition, and the county has supported this progressive action by Gadabout through federal funding by supporting them for a grant. So we're very happy about that. And we are discussing with Gadabout about how this type of capability could be used to support volunteer transportation services. There are 9 different organized programs in the county, and how this could be the backboard to develop more services. So we're very happy about that. Our federally funded mobility as a service program is underway. It's a two-year program. The FTA awarded the county last March $820,000 for this innovative project. We did not really begin to work on this project until this July. And looking at the other 23 awardees around the country, we pretty much joined the smaller grantees in terms of taking time to be able to begin work on this project, since, frankly, we were very much tied up and directing our attention to the transportation for vaccinations and for food delivery and other types of services earlier in 2021. So there's three main elements to this phase one of our project. And the first one is creating a combined customer service center, which would provide customer support for all mobility providers in the county or coming to the county. So it includes services from Cortland, Schuyler, and Chemung County, in addition to Tompkins County. And we're developing a customer service app to enable people to access the same kind of information through a smartphone. And we are supporting TCAT's T-Connect pilots that are currently operating in Lansing and Dryden. So the FTE is still 1.0, and I'm very happy to take people's questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dwight, for a very thorough presentation. Does anybody have any questions for Dwight? It appears not. Thanks again, Dwight. Oh, wait, Mike's got a question.
Yes, Mike.
Dwight, do you do your own clerical work, or do you share that with some other office?
I've been doing my own clerical and definitely need some additional support. And this is something that I will be coming back to in terms of using some of our grant funding that would support that. The time has long passed for having additional support.
I'm not surprised. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the heads up. Okay, anyone else? All right. Thank you, Dwight.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
All right, so now we will be moving on to recycling, which appears on page 4-178 of your book. Barbara, are you there? There she is.
Yes, we're here. Jenny's just got to go to the beginning of our presentation. That's the last slide. Thank you. Well, hello, everybody. We went through a very difficult year last year and into this year. We approved a new recycling contract with Casella for five years. And if you recall, Jason and I provided you with six financial options, of which we selected what was then called option four. That was to deal with the fact that the recycling cost for the center was going up by $1.3 million over the 10-year before contract. So that resulted in the plan to increase the annual fee by $5 for 5 years each year. And also, we couldn't balance our budget with what was projected, and we had to take funds significantly out of our fund balance and for this year, and that's what's also in the picture for next year. the revenues were last year at a record low, and we are moving forward. So basically in 2021, we were going to take about $375,000 out of the fund balance. And then in this year coming up, we're going to need to take $275,000. That is not a happy situation, but we kept recycling going. That was a major decision. And I think you'll be happy to know, and I'm about to start my presentation, that recycling revenues have been slowly edging up this year. And in the last 3 months, they are more than edging. They're getting to be good. Now, I want to just say that that doesn't mean we're out of the woods. It certainly isn't paying the $1.3 million extra for expenses, but we're not in dire straits. And to all of you who wanted to see the recycling program continue, I feel very grateful. So that's, let's go to the first slide. So when we went into the budget meetings last year in the summer or early fall, we were projecting an expenditure of about $6.5 million. What essentially happened is if you add $1.3 million to that, that's how the budget turned out at the end of the year when we got the contract finalized in November. And then this year we are going from, it was $7.8 million last year, and we're actually now looking at $8 million. There have been cuts along the way. I will tell you that I've been holding and not increasing any waste diversion programs whatsoever for the last 2 to 3 years. I can tell you, I hope there's a day in a little bit in 2022 and more in 2023 when we can actually move our diversion level from 56% higher. I'm planning to do more with focusing on reducing greenhouse gas emissions and diversion of food waste, through food waste diversion. And that includes both residential and commercial. There's a lot of interest in the community about these initiatives for not only recycling or composting, but for helping educate in terms of wasted food and the impact on greenhouse gas emissions. So let's go to the next slide, please. Staffing-wise, we have been holding steady down from previous years. The only thing that we did here was we added a few hours to the scale operator position because we needed more coverage without having way too many people going in the scale house to substitute in order to keep the scales open 9 hours a day, 6 days a week. Next slide, please. Again, inconsistent with the financial option that was picked, we see a rise in the residential fee. The college fee is going down a little bit, but that's primarily due to the formula, and their tonnages went way down in the previous year because of COVID. That'll obviously, as now they're back in session and they're doing more, that should go back, you know, within the next year. Everything else is holding steady. And that's really what we're talking about. The disposal fee is the same. And that's really the picture. Next slide, please. All right, before I actually get into this, I just wanted to give you a flavor of what pays for what. The disposal fees that we collect at the scales or through the trash tags and the haulers is one piece of our budget. We collect about $2.2 million that way. Remember, no money is taken from the property taxes. It's all an enterprise fund. And then roughly $4.4 million comes out of the annual fee for all the non-disposal programs, and these are net of revenues. Next year, we're projecting significantly higher revenues, but it could even be better than that, depending on where things go. There's and then we have miscellaneous revenues, but there's three variables that are going to come into play. And those of you who've been around for a while have, you know, I mean, history has a way of repeating itself. I think I was able to share this story about 25 to 30 years ago, but not in the last 5 years. And that is market. There is a shortfall of, there's a great demand for paper right now, both mixed paper and cardboard. And that's because 9 new domestic mills, thank goodness, did open their doors. We had talked about the fact that there were going to be 12 in the next, I said last year, in the next year or two, and that's certainly happening. That's fabulous because the fiber doesn't have to go anywhere but in this country. There's a mill, Pratt opened up a new mill. They're a big recycling fiber company in Ohio, and believe it or not, they're eating up some of the demand from our area. There is also still the Amazon effect, the trends from COVID, albeit the residential tonnage has gone up because of cardboard, in place of a lot of the other tonnage from, businesses and colleges. That is a lot more home buying. That's contributing. And I don't know if you heard recently in the news, but people are going to have trouble buying paper, and especially virgin paper. So again, the, EPP program to buy 100% recycled fiber is really important. So that is what's really going on. I'll talk to you now about what is in the $75 per household fee. And you can see that the lion's share of what we pay for is the fact that we oversee the recycling pickup, which this legislature chose to continue, and I'm so glad. Then we have the recycling contract at the recycling center. We also have a growing program for organics, which is yard waste and residential food waste. And again, that's an area for easy growth, not too much investment. There are entrepreneurs that are coming into town to do, to do vermiculture and other things. We're going to be investing a lot in looking in the community to grow some of the small entrepreneurs that can collect food scraps and not just have the big ones. I have brought to the attention of the city sustainability director, along with Terry, at meetings that we've been having, why it's essential for them to do a residential food scrap pickup and invest in that, along with their trash, so that they can make a dent in greenhouse gas emissions. I figure there's something that they can do, and I want to let them know. We're still, working on old landfills. We don't have any debt there, but we are needing to do the leachate collection, the treatment, and the maintenance, et cetera. I forgot to mention the recycling budget also includes the capital investments and the amortized debt that we pay there. You can see waste reduction, which should grow a little bit, is a small part of the budget. Administration, our budget is 85% contracted out. Of our total budget, about $1 million is staff and fringes of the roughly $8 million budget. And then, of course, we have our nice HHW program to reduce toxicity. So the only other thing I wanted to mention is that we are really hoping we get some of these grant funds that have been contracted for with the state. Last year, I think they were shut down. We have roughly $220,000 outstanding, and I would I'm actually going to be talking with Lisa and also Deborah Dawson. I really want us to reach to the top of that organization and really find out how we can collect the funds. These are mostly for our educational grants. And it seems to me now they're, you know, it's been about three and a half years. And we can't really plan to get them, but if we do get this money, that's roughly just $1 is $54,000 of expense on the annual fee. So $1 on the annual fee is $54,000 in expense. And obviously that would represent a good chunk of, you know, money that would go back into the annual fee. So goals for the year next year are to look at what opportunity there is to take less out of the fund balance. We do have a fund balance that we project at the end of the year to be 21%, which is higher than the 16% required, which is better because I did cut a lot of costs and minimize program. So that's really the main goal. And then to look at a combination maybe in 2023, possibly, but maybe not, maybe 2024 to reduce that annual fee a little bit. But, you know, we'll have to play it one year at a time, see where we land. But in the meantime, I would say that I'm bringing you a much more stable budget than I have in the last several years. That's my story.
And it's a good one, Barbara. Thank you.
Yeah, it's so much better. I don't worry as much, but we're only starting to see that recycling revenue increase. And when I talked with the VP of recycling at Casella, you know, everyone knows what happens is it gets better and then of course it goes down. And you certainly could project what could happen in a few years. But I will tell you that our next step between now and the end of the year, as we can really hone in on expenses and revenue changes, we're going to be developing our multi-year budget. It's our five-year budget that we always put together so that if, you know, you want to take a look at what lies in the future, there's always increases in, you know, cost of all these operations and staffing, but at least it gives you a flavor. And then I can really lay out for you what I want to do in a work plan to do more in terms of, you know, reducing our food waste, which is, a big carbon sink. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think Mike Lane's got a question for you.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Mike.
You've always been a great manager for us, so we've always appreciated that. And you've always laid out your budgets in a very understandable way. I believe last year we raised the annual fee by $10. Is that right?
Well, what we did was we raised it by $10 from what the year before was, but $5 more when we got the new contract from what we had predicted. So there's a big difference there. So in 2019, we had an annual fee of 60. We then increased it to 65 in the budget. But then we got the contract results of $1.3 million more. And remember, $1.3 million, when you look at $1 equals $54,000, that was not how, you know, that was not anywhere near enough to balance the budget. We had to reduce the budget and we had to find money from the fund balance. It was a very desperate situation. So 2019 was 60, projected before contract was 65. We knew we weren't going to have anywhere near enough money to balance the budget. It was 70. And the financial plan, and I can just show you the piece of paper as proof here. This is what Jason and I went and gave a long presentation about. It was the financial options that were dated November of 2020, and the one that was picked by the legislature was adding $5 each year to balance the budget, including taking money out of the reserves and slowly restoring the fund balance. Now, we don't have, I don't think in 2023 we're going to wind up needing to take money out of the fund balance. But again, I would not venture a guess as to what the recycling revenues could be. So let's be prudent this year and stay the course.
All right, let's come back to my question. My question was, didn't we raise the recycling and solid waste fee by $10 last year?
No.
We didn't?
What I said was that...
How much did we raise it by?
Five. Five compared to what we were proposing.
No, I'm not talking about what you're proposing. I mean the actual figure that went out on the bill. Was a $10 increase, I thought.
It was, again, let me say it one more time. It was a $10 increase from 2019. It was a $5 increase from what we had hoped, but then got the new recycling contract and we had to pay $1.3 million more.
I'm not saying it isn't justified. I just want everyone to understand.
And now we're asking for
another $5 increase.
Every year we're going to need that.
And now we've asked for another $5 increase to $75. One of the reasons that we looked, and you're exactly right in what you just said, we picked the schedule that we wanted to go with last year, because we knew that recycling costs had gone up hugely and that the recycling markets had tanked. We're glad to hear that they're going up again. But we wanted to be able to look at these recycling fee each year. We thought it with no changes that it would have to go up $5 a year.
Well, there are no changes. As a matter of fact, the costs have increased by $300,000 this year from last year.
What I'd like us to keep in mind is that if the recycling sales go up, because they are commodities, we know they go up and down, that we can keep in mind the possibility of not necessarily raising the recycling fee quite so much each year.
No, that's not true, Mike, because we're still dealing with a fund balance shortfall of $600,000. Let's balance our fund balance before we can look at the annual fee.
All right, I'm going to leave it at that, but it is $15 over 2 years. Thanks.
Over three. Well,
wait, if it was $60 in 2019, what was it in 2020?
Like it was 70 with the
okay. So. No, it's not in 2 years. It's in 3 years.
That's correct.
Right. So it's gone up $5 every year. Right? Okay.
Yes. I mean, you've said it correctly. I don't know what else to say to help Mike here.
All right. Now, I don't think you can say anything more. I don't think anybody's questioning whether it's necessary. Nobody wants you to eat down your fund balance to nothing. All right, so who else has a question? Okay, I've got one from Glenn and one from Martha.
I have Rich John and Ann Corman with their hands up here.
Okay, so let's honor the people who are here virtually. Let's start with Rich and then Annie and then Martha.
Thanks, Deborah. And Barbara, thanks for the juggling on this. I know it's been a tough series of years. I was curious if you have any plans on bringing plastic film back into the mix and even at a charge to consumers to be able to recycle plastic film.
We could. It's just that we changed the way the operation works now and we've got different other things that are being recycled more at that separate drop-off that it would require another shift in how we do the collection. I guess what I would say, I mean, we've heard from a few people, but most of the people, because I see the customer inquiries and I hear about them, most people, if they know that they can bring them to a store, are fine with that. It's a very expensive thing to be collecting, and we'd have to add another $20,000 to the budget for very little amount.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you. Annie?
Thank you. Again, Barb, thank you for your patience over the last few years and today.
Thanks for yours, too.
You're welcome. And so something that we've been talking about the last few months, and I've been talking to Rich and Deborah and several legislators about, we don't need to go in depth, but since we're ahead a couple of minutes, can you just give us a quick, if possible, just a quick summary on what your involvement is in the reuse center and getting that started?
Yes.
How you haven't been able to give them as much money this year.
I can. Diane and I go way back to when she was the director at Historic Ithaca many, many years ago. We also worked together to brainstorm the Finger Lakes Reuse Center. I was on the Finger Lakes Reuse Board of Directors for some time. I helped her with financial models as well as programmatic aspects. Last year, with all of the other cuts that I had to make in our budget because of the dire straits for financials, I eliminated a number of nonprofit services, much to my dissatisfaction, because Finger Lakes Reuse is a very, very important program in this community, and putting economic development as well as reduction and so on. So unfortunately, again, this year, that hasn't returned to my budget, which is too bad. I did put in $15,000 in order for there to be some future planning of Diane's goals in the coming years with a growth. And there are a lot of people trying to help Finger Lakes Reuse grow to do similar things as other communities with a distribution center, et cetera.
Thanks, Barb. I think that's probably all the information we need with respect to a budget relevant issue. I know that Annie's quite concerned about Finger Lakes Reuse, but it's not really on tonight's agenda. I'm trying to keep us very focused. Martha.
Hi, Barb. Did you say for Finger Lakes Reuse 50, like 50 or 15?
15.
Okay. On the fact that the recycling fees are going up, do I remember correctly when you renegotiated with Casella, I think we had asked that there be a mechanism by which if recycling fees rebounded, we'd be able to renegotiate their costs. Is that right?
Not exactly. But what we did do was something that is going to help us tremendously, which is we can't renegotiate their cost expense side, but I did renegotiate toward the latter part with Jason how we receive revenue. So depending on what the average commodity is, we would either get a minimum of 70% below it, as long as we met a threshold. Sometimes it would be zero if it were lower than that. I think the threshold was $70 a ton, $65.70. And at the time, we were at about $40-$45 per ton. But over the course of the spring, we were still below that threshold, but in the last 3 months, we are now getting paid, I think it's like 80%. It went from 80%, and it might even be for September, it might be 90% of the revenue. So we have a good situation because if these revenues can stay high, we'll make even more.
You mean when Casella gets more per ton for the recycling materials, our percentage goes up?
Correct.
Oh.
Depending on the value. I mean, there's a structure to it that's in the contract, but we were so unhappy with what the expenses were, and there was no talking about that I at least got in the revenue share getting better as the revenues increased.
Okay, great. And then you said something about you have $220,000 $220,000 outstanding in state grants. Are you saying these are state grants that you were awarded like several years ago, but you haven't gotten the money yet?
They are either from 2019, 2020, and part of 2021. And when we inquire, we get the same thing, which is everyone is behind and we're working as fast as we can.
Who's we?
I think it's primarily the staff. I have not made a call yet, and I am planning to once I'm completed with the budget and some other projects, but I am going to talk to the director there. But I do think we need some help.
Which agency, Barbara?
I'm sorry?
What department?
My grants are only with the Department of Environmental Conservation. Sorry about that.
DEC staff. That might be an Anna Kellis question.
Yeah, I think so. It's probably with our Medicaid reconciliation payments. And we'll get them all at once, right?
No, that's crazy. I mean, a little bit behind, but 2019?
Well, and the truth is that number, we have that grant, the educational money, part of it, like I think it's about 80,000 to 100,000 a year that, I mean, we're only going to get further and further behind. And when we talk with the people overseeing the grant, you know, they say, well, we weren't working for a year and this and that. It seems all silly and we do need the help.
Yeah,
Thank you for the question. And I think Anna would be good. I didn't know whether or not it would be something that, you know, there are other legislators. In the past, when we had these difficulties, Martha, you've been very, very helpful in helping me to reach out. So.
Yeah, but I think Anna is the one who would be able to make
Anna, Anna's on the state legislature, but I'm talking about, is there any contact from our legislature that should go along with me?
Well, sure. If you send us, you know, a summary of what the grants are for, how much, what years, and which division of DEC, if you want, I can forward that to Anna. That'd be helpful.
Yeah.
But I mean,
yeah, and I can also talk to her as a follow up. That sounds great, Martha. Thank you for that.
We can write a letter and some of
the things.
There's stuff we can do, Barb.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. That's exactly what I was hoping for. Appreciate it.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for asking me a question, Martha, because I was going to ask it. Are there any other questions from anyone? Okay. Seeing none. Thanks again, Barb.
Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Have a pleasant evening.
You too.
And now we can move on to highway and highway machinery, which are at pages 4-84 and 4-82.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, Jeff.
Really nice weather out there. Hope someone's enjoying it. I'll just share my screen here. Nope, that is not what I want. That's what I want.
Oh, your bag is better.
I think you can see that, right? But it's not... No, you're not seeing that at all, are you? You're still seeing me.
Yeah, we are.
Okay.
Is
not in presentation mode.
It's not the full page. Should be able to.
It's fine, all right.
Yeah, that'll work. Okay. I'm not sure why it's not giving me that option. I can reduce it, but I can't make it.
The slideshow.
Okay. This will be, I think, in some ways I shouldn't watch everyone else's presentations because it seems they don't necessarily follow the directions. And I kind of put a presentation very straightforward and I offer to, if anybody has any questions after or after tonight, I'm happy to, you know, provide whatever information you'd like to see. But I did, you know, stick very closely to the presentation slides. I talk about the, you know, our budget impacts, and I directly talked about OTRs. So here we go.
I need to apologize, Jeff.
I'm
to explain what it is that the Highway Department does.
Yeah, and I wasn't looking to necessarily do that, but anyway. Recommended budget is, let's just get where I can. So going back a little bit to 2021, we had this is our operating year. We had a little increase there, the 278, that's around state funding having to do with highways, CHIPS funding. Going forward into 2022, I am still affected by the 12% cut and the 2% increase. So we're still 10% below what we were in 19 before COVID. This side of the budget in the highway does not have any OTRs. That's going to be in machinery. But in the full-time equivalent area, I am increasing it by one person. This is a front office admin person, and part of their duties, we are taking over the inner office mail for the county from the clerk's office. So that's going to be part of this person's duties as well. They're going to have other administrative duties. I'm hoping, I'm believing that we can also help with some of the project that Dominic is looking to launch with the public information software page and all that. I'm hoping that that person can also be the collector and the sharer of that information for the department. Moving over to the highway machinery budget, we have our recommended budget again shows this is where the OTRs are. The base and the target is in within the 2% increase target. And then the OTR is a healthy one at $898,000. That does look like a large increase of 69%, and that's directly related to the OTRs. On the mechanic end of things, we are still down one, but we do not have any plans to get back up to six from the earlier number of 2019. We're back down to five and we seem to be holding steady, and we really don't have the room to get that person back. Just wanted to say at this time and really across the board, the department, we lost three positions. Collectively, around the department, everyone has just kind of taken on those duties. We've shared them, and it's really, really, commendable to the people in the department on what they've done through that. Getting back to the over target requests, and I have some photographs for everybody. The three that add up to the total is the Great All excavator. And I'll think I can go forward and back pretty easy. There's the Great All. That's a 1997 Great All. Great All excavators are used daily at the highway department most of the year. You know, they're very special purpose rubber tired vehicle designed, and mostly we do ditching, increase and provide drainage work with them. We presently have four Great Alls. This is replacing the oldest of the four. And like I said, all four of them are in daily use. So just back to this page, talk about the snow and ice tandem truck. These are dual purpose vehicles. There's a picture of a new one. This one is actually our standby tractor. When we take the stainless steel box off, we put a special attachment on, and then we can actually use it as our standby to move and move equipment around the county. So it pulls our low boy, it pulls our dump trailer. It's actually converts into a tractor trailer, if you will. And most of our vehicles are dual purpose like that. In the summertime, we take the, you know, the plow and the headgear and the wing off and the other apparatus that might be specific to snow and ice. And then that we haul material and haul ditch material for the grade, all the ditching ditches and things like that. The one that we're replacing is a 2006. That's the oldest one in our fleet. To keep with that. So just go back up here again for the boom. It's $170,000 80-foot boom lift. This is a stock photo. It's not the actual boom lift. We do not have a boom lift now. What we've been forced to do is rent boom lifts or bucket trucks from various vendors around the county. It does work. We've done it now for one full year. It is expensive. The downside is that I see is that it doesn't allow us the capacity to really go out and do that work at our convenience. It's harder to find these units, and it's a very high level of comfort and convenience to have one, you know, for us that we can utilize anytime there's a storm or the need to cut canopy on the road, kind of around throughout all the months of the year, and not just when one's available. Through the wintertime months. If it happened to be a wintertime that we actually were to receive a lot of snow, we wouldn't be able to get much canopy cut. And that's usually the first step in the annual projects of the year. One of the first things we do is we cut our right-of-way back. That goes along with some high tree cutting, canopy, getting the sunlight in the road. Does a lot for the wintertime months is getting the sunlight to hit the blacktop surface and bears the road up. That's it for me. I have a question slide. One of my favorite pictures of Chaffee Creek area out in Newfield. Certainly willing to answer any questions anybody might have.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Does anyone have questions? Martha.
Hey, Jeff, that's not a road.
No, it's not. It's off the edge of one.
A question on your FTE page. Page 103 in our book, in 2020, you show 40.44 FTEs, and then the next year you go down to 33. Was that summer crew where we had, you were sharing with the towns, the town and the city? I mean, that's a big, it went up in 2020 and then went down again. Was that a specific program?
Yes, that was the Public Works Apprenticeship Program is what I believe you're referring to.
Yeah.
Some pages in the budget books, I just want to caution, sometimes it looks like they're combining both of our two budgets. Sometimes the FTE will grab both of them. And what we have here is about 41 full-time. So I just want to caution you that you're not seeing that. But it sounds like what you're referring to is what you think it is, and that's the Public Works Apprenticeship Program. The county was the sponsor for all those positions. So they all showed up here, even though we didn't enjoy all of them. We had three. It was a rotation. There was three here at Highway, three at the city, and three at the town of Ithaca Public Works.
Okay, right. And it looks like we're not able to restart that program. Is that right?
We really haven't started it. We haven't even talked about it as far as collectively with the town and the city. I can say that, and I worked closely with Jason before he left. I know Lisa's aware. We've really launched what we're calling a commercial driver or a CDL acquirement academy with all of our seasonals. The goal there is to keep our seasonal worker temporary positions and supply them with the resources necessary to obtain a CDL if they're willing and they're interested. We have, for instance, what we're doing, been doing this summer is we have our CORU's normal work week is a 4 10-hour work week. It's Monday through Thursday. What we've done with the candidates, we have three candidates right now that are in the program, and they all are advancing at various stages. Everybody learns at different speeds, but there's three people enrolled, and they are, you know, on a voluntary basis. And then we work with some of our full-time people that are willing to work with these individuals that want to learn and the people that want to teach, and they come in on Friday, and there's some focus time when they can actually work and walk around a truck and ride in a truck. They're doing that through the regular week, but the Friday is reserved for that, that very focused learning time. I would say that we have three this year. We've had seasonals come and go. We're going to continue. We did a very heavy outreach this spring. We've just recently started another round trying to accept some more applications in our seasonal worker pool. And hopefully we can continue that almost like an ongoing list and pull candidates in and obtain their CDL. And the idea, the overall overarching idea of that is that a lot of things going on. You've heard about the need for the DOT testing facility or DMV CDL testing facility that we're looking to do in the county. Those facilities are very busy. They're a long ways away. There's one in Corning, one in Syracuse, I think one in Binghamton. So it's a little bit harder to get a CDL. They've reduced the time with a permit to 6 months from a year. So a candidate that is learning to drive a CDL has to first get their permit. If they don't take the road test in 6 months, they have to retest or extend the permit. So that's a little bit harder. A year was kind of much more forgiving for the average person. So that's a little tougher. And I think that as a whole, the industry is, you know, seeing a shortage of CDL license holders. And whether these people, these individuals that we can help, the idea is to keep a pool. They're building their resume. They're working at the highway department. They're obtaining their CDL. They're getting valuable career building resume stuff. And whether we have the openings here to get them into a full-time role, which is great, obviously, but also the surrounding towns, the city can also enjoy and draw from that pool of candidates. That's really kind of a nutshell from the cuff. I'm not sure if you're going all that information with that question, Martha, but that's really kind of what's going on here. To say this last piece, that we're a little bit unique from the city and the town, and that they did not in the public works apprenticeship program, the other municipalities were a little bit shy about working with people to get their CDL, and us only having that 3 months of contact wasn't long enough to give them that opportunity. So I think in some ways what we're offering is enhanced, and it's a little bit better than what the Public Works Apprentice Program was for that resume career building aspect of obtaining a CDL. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Well, that sounds really good. I appreciate that. And you didn't see me nodding, but now I'm going to ask about your OTRs. I see on all three of them, you've got federal aid. And it's a little confusing. It says you requested zero federal aid, but then recommended are the three amounts, and they add up to $898,000, which is then on the previous page showing federal aid of $898,000. So maybe that's at least the question was. Maybe this was, you just asked for these as one time, and then is this something maybe ARPA money went towards, or?
I submitted them as both ARPA candidates, possible ARPA candidates, and as OTRs in the budget. I basically formatted the request for the ARPA funds in the OTR format. So, and that's the direction I believe we're going in. So that would be and Lisa may have something to add on that as well.
Yeah, the reference to federal funds is ARPA, as you suspected, Martha. So yeah, this is a recommended use of ARPA funds as one time here.
Okay, thanks very much. Appreciate that. But you are recommending this $898,000 in your budget, Lisa, right?
Yes.
Because on page 107, if he has requested OTR $898,000, then total recommended zero. So I just want to be sure it is in the recommended budget.
No,
I see 898.
Yeah, I see 898. Other,
I'm
under,
on page 107.
Yeah.
If you look at department net local, under requested OTRs, 898,000. Then we go over two columns, and it's recommended, total recommended, and there's zero.
It's because it's recommended under federal aid. In that same column, under the recommended OTRs.
Oh, I see. It's up there. Okay, got it.
Their revenues.
There's got to be a better way. Shawnee, you had a question?
Yeah, I had a question similar to Martha's. My understanding about the internship program was that it allowed for us to recruit community members and help community members really enter into the workforce and to obtain skills from the city, the town, the county. And again, people with different backgrounds, people who might have recently been incarcerated. And, you know, that program had actually been mentioned in many of our community discussions as far as alternatives to incarceration, as somewhat of a back-to-work program. And the program that you mentioned, while it sounds really nice and getting people trained, especially with CDLs, I'm not sure that it really fits into what the internship program used to be. Can you tell me your thoughts a little bit, Jeff?
Yeah, we just haven't talked. It's not that we were planning to never do it again. The different, I think, struggles with the budget and COVID and a lot of other things that were unknown as we've been progressing through the last couple of years is the reason. But I haven't heard from the town or the city on their, like, looking to restart the program and I'm not going to speak for them. I don't know that it's never going to happen again. But what I'm saying is that rather than that happening, this is something else that we're doing. And it's exactly targeting. We're doing a lot of our outreach. I'm working with HR and Dominic to really get as many applicants as you described to apply. That is a targeted outreach group. But in the end, we're filling as many positions that we can. I think what we're doing has an extra bonus to it because they have that interest, but absolutely what you're saying and the various positions and the experience they get with the town and the city especially has water and sewer and streets, and a lot of stuff they do is very different than what the town of Ithaca and what we do are very similar, but the town of Ithaca also has some water and sewer. So, you know, that said, it was a great program. It just has not restarted.
Okay. And there also, I'm guessing there will probably be some workforce money for this category of workers in the upcoming year with stimulus money and even with some state funding. So if we could look into that, that might be really helpful for you.
I can tell you it's really hard getting very many applications. We've had a very, comparatively speaking, this season has had a very small number of applicants, and we've done probably, I can't compare it, but a great amount of outreach and a lot of different billboards, posting flyers, social media, And I'm hoping that that can change and people become aware of these positions. So any help, anyone, any contacts anybody has, if they want to pass it on to me, I'm happy to you know, completely do more outreach and continue to do that. We're looking for applicants right now.
That's great. Thanks, Jeff.
Can I just speak to that as well, because I think, Jeff, you brought up an important point, and just for to further, Shauna, your question. At the end of the internship program that was designed with the city, the county, and the town, it was designed for the applicants to get the experience necessary to be hired by one of those entities. And my understanding was in order to be hired for a permanent position at the highway department, you really need that CDL. And that the 3-month rotation at the highway department did not offer those interns the opportunity, the time to get the CDL training. So I think that in looking at this program moving forward, if we want to continue, it may take some revamping to achieve the goal that we're looking for on the county's end. If we want the applicants to come out with the experience to be able to be hired by the county, we weren't getting that previously.
Okay. I mean, I think my concern is that for people that have past histories, many of them aren't eligible for a CDL.
Well, that's an issue, but now we're getting really far off budget. So Mike can't stand up.
Good afternoon, Jeff.
Good afternoon.
Can you tell us how we're doing with your pavement management plan? Are we keeping up with the goals there?
Yeah, we're doing well. The extra work that extra funding we got from the state this year has really, really contributed greatly to extending our paving program throughout the summer. We were able to do over 30 miles of chip sealing this spring, which is 100% a preservation measure and extends the lifetime of the road. And as well, I plan on, last year we did a similar type budget presentation, and I'm planning on also bringing a kind of an update to F&I. And I was asked to come to the board. I think Dave McKenna asked me. I did a presentation to the board about our summer work program. That's usually part of this presentation. So I'm happy to do that again if everyone is willing to see that and go through the pain of watching that. But overall, the weather has been at times stormy. It does set us back. But nothing major, and we're getting a lot of work done. It's been a good summer. The pavement prices stayed pretty good. It hasn't gone up, shot up radically, though it has gone up every month, the escalation there. We expect that we will probably have a fairly record setting miles of road paved this season.
Thank you. Okay, I think
that's all good news. Thank you, Jeff.
You said someone has a question.
I have Ann Corman and Rich John with their hands up.
Okay, Annie and then Rich.
Thank you. So, Jeff, two questions. The first one is, and maybe you said this, I'm not sure, for the CDL licensure, would that be together with something happening at the airport to provide it up there, or are you able to do all that through your department?
Not really connecting with the airport about any of that. I'm not sure if they have the seasonal temporary type employment need.
They were thinking about doing a CDL program up there.
Okay, I'm not sure.
So it's not connected.
Might be the same thing, but if you might be talking about the testing site at the airport.
Okay, so they're
that would be very much connected to what we're trying to do here, and having a testing site locally would be a great, great addition to this area.
So that would augment your CDL training. Okay,
we are really getting far, far off the budget track. Can we please limit our questions to things that directly impact or are reflected in the budget recommendations?
Okay, the boom lift under the machinery. So you said, so that is something that you were leasing before, or not leasing, renting? So you weren't leasing it like full-time year, just part-time? You were leasing it or renting it per equipment or
monthly.
Per need?
Monthly.
Oh, monthly. Okay. And then you would be able to do maintenance with that also, right?
Tree cutting.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Annie. Rich?
Yeah, thank you, Deborah. Jeff, from the standpoint of looking at your overall budget, the three pieces of equipment really skew things in that they're all OTRs, but you buy trucks every year. Does it make sense to have these as one-time OTRs, or shouldn't there be an equipment line or truck line that shows this as a recurring expense? It's just applied in different ways. I see Lisa nodding her head. If you guys could educate me. Thanks.
Yeah, we do have money in the regular target budget for equipment and vehicles, which actually, thank you for reminding me. I wanted to mention we do have funding for an electric F-150 in next year's budget. One, possibly two, depending on lots unknown about the price, but that is our plan to replace a couple of pickups, possibly one for sure with an electric vehicle. There's also a small excavator in there. I didn't do that in the main presentation because we were only looking at OTRs. Normally I show you our equipment and the target equipment and vehicles as well in the presentation.
Okay. That's what I thought, that we had target expense. So how do you decide what goes into target and what's an OTR?
So what's in our target is basically a fee. Forever it was $424,000, and it was split different ways between highway and equipment. And what we keep finding is that that's not enough to keep up with our 5, 10, 15 year equipment replacement plan. So that's what forces the OTRs. So what we've done recently is we've added another $100,000. So now it's up to $524,000. And that does give us a fair amount of buying power. I think that because we didn't buy any equipment last year, some of the grade all was coming last year, and the plow equipment is always going to be coming, and we lost a little bit last year. So it's a great time to have these OTRs come in. The goal is to possibly keep augmenting that target machinery budget so that we don't have to keep doing OTRs. And that $100,000 was a step in that direction last year.
All right, that helps make sense of it. So what is the true target number as you see it that would do away with yearly OTRs?
I would need to really look at our long-term equipment plan, but the idea, and Jason and I talked about this a lot, Lisa's also was part of these conversations, where even though we have a fair amount in the target, there's always going to be, because equipment, look at the price of the grade all this year. I would have put that about a $320,000. We start talking to a vendor and it's over $400,000. We're all amazed at the highway department. So it's hard to like keep looking down the road, and we're keeping current and keeping what we're doing and keeping that stuff that we need to get our work done. I think you're always going to have this very random line every year, but the higher we can get that target, it will enable us to only maybe pay for half through the OTRs, basically shrinking that OTR. That was what we specifically talked about. It wasn't like trying to get it high enough, because then I think it's going to be so high that, quite honestly, I'll start spending it on other stuff. You know, it's a matter of massaging that word in there, right? Massaging that, the long-term need. And, The OTR works great, but it does drain down our reserves. And that's historically where we've gotten our OTRs from. So we want to work to build the target up a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we discussed, adding another $100,000 to target for this purpose. We, given the extent of the OTRs this year and our trying to recover and what we could cover under target was limited, but we did have this opportunity with the ARP funds to utilize them for this purpose. But yes, Rich, you hit on the goal is really to replenish that target when we're able.
Okay, thank you. Next year, it'll all reconcile, I'm sure. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Martha, but then I'm a little confused because you've got two fund balances. You've got the road fund balance and highway machinery. I'm looking at section 2, page 37. Isn't that, doesn't that kind of function with your operating? Can we take the screen off as he's finished with the presentation? I don't know if that's Jeff or Kathy, but don't those assigned funds work with your regular budget? So because of these big ups and downs that you talk about, where you might, you know, one year you have a $500,000 expenditure and the next year you have 100 or something. So in a sense, you don't, having the fund balances that you have sort of protects the annual budget from those huge swings. Is that right?
That's we've exactly said that as well. So that OTR tapping into that. So by building up the target to the right level, which we've taken that $100,000 step already, by building that up to the right level, it will, because almost every year I've been here, we've had at least a $400,000 up to larger $700,000-$800,000 OTRs. And the higher we can get the target, the better shape that those reserves are going to be maintained, because we've been drawing it way down and looking at that over the next few years, we wouldn't be able to purchase the equipment that we need to. So that you exactly said the same conversation that Lisa, Jason and I have talked about. That's the goal with getting that target up to the right level.
Okay, because I noticed, for example, you're not even listed in the OTR list, in the rollover list, because you just operate differently than everybody else.
Yeah, we don't get rollover. It all goes to reserve.
Right, okay. Thanks very much.
Okay, I think that horse is dead. So does anybody else have any other questions? If not, we wish you a pleasant evening, Jeff, and thanks very much for your presentation.
Thank you, everyone. Good night.
All righty. We're not too far behind. Let's take a 5-minute comfort break, and then we will finish up. All right. We're back. And Arel is going to tell us about facilities.
Good evening. How are you all? Glad to be here to share my budget. So I'm going to share the screen now. Are you all able to see the screen?
Yes, sir, we can.
Okay. Good. So the recommended budget for the department, grand total is $4.264 million. It reflects a $245,000 increase over last year due to over target requests that I'll show shortly here. Full-time equivalents has not changed from 2021, 33. 2022 also reflects 33. My target was 32, but there's an OTR.
Okay, Ralph, can you get closer to whatever your mic is and speak louder?
Can you hear me better now?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Hold on. So I have an OTR of one FTE for this year, which still keeps us at 33 FTEs from 2021. Over target requests, there are three over target requests. One is for restoration of building repairs funding at $45,805. And so I have a slide for each one. And this was funding that was the reduction in occupancy in our buildings, and also several buildings were closed to the public. But now that departments and buildings are starting to approach full occupancy and most are open to the public, the restoration of this funding is essential for us to adequately maintain all county facilities. So that's what that OTR 97 is for. The second one is for maintenance vehicles replacement, and it's for two maintenance vehicles. The first is a replacement of a 10-year-old HVAC maintenance van that's used by one of our two HVAC technicians that services all our county facilities. And so I included a picture of the existing van and a proposed new van for the HVAC van. The next one is also a 10-year-old maintenance and plow truck that is in poor condition, and it's used for maintenance as well as snow removal operations during the winter. And the last OTR is capital projects engineering support. And engineering staff support is really needed in the coming years as we look at moving forward with the center of government project, a multi-year green facilities energy project that we presented to FNI, but that we will share with the legislature next month, and also a possible public safety building space improvements in the future, you know, 5 to 10 years. And so this OTR includes the funding not only for the position, an associate civil engineer, but also for a vehicle and a computer for that individual. And that's my presentation.
My goodness, that was short and sweet. Thank you, Arel. Yes. Are there questions? Martha, Arel, page 77, section 4, on your rollovers. So the civil engineer, there's federal aid, one-time federal aid is $37,000 applied to that.
Okay, yes.
I mean, I guess that is going towards the vehicle and computer equipment?
Yes, it would be for the one time, which would be either the vehicle or computer combined.
And is that ARPA money again?
Yes, between the vehicle and the computer is $37,000 is what I budgeted. So that ARPA would offset those two items.
Okay, thank you. Maybe, so it's at least a question. When we see federal aid 5 like that, should we maybe just assume that's ARPA?
Yes. Yes, I think okay. That's safe to assume.
I'm sorry, you didn't hear that?
That's safe to assume, yes.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks, good question. Nice to have that clarified. Kathy, you have somebody online?
Rich John has his hand up.
Rich?
Thanks. Arel, the civil engineer in your third OTR, do you anticipate that counterbalancing outside consultant fees? Would we reduce
No.
your spend elsewhere?
No. Just a quick background. About 20 years ago, we had a separate engineering division, and my division was buildings and grounds. Some of the key management folks left, and I proposed to the county administration legislature to merge the two and create facilities. I'm an engineer by background, civil, structural. And so we proposed merging them. I did not hire any positions. And so basically all of these years between myself and sometimes the deputy, we've been trying to handle all the technical aspects of, you know, project administration, to the detriment sometimes of really running the department. And so as we get into a lot more projects in the, starting next year, this position would really do a lot of the technical administration, project management that are really our responsibility to do. Those are more difficult for us to outsource to consultants. I mean, we've kind of maximized what we can do with our consultants all these years, but at this point, we really need also an in-house person to we have to do code inspections, but also the project management and coordinating with not only our consultants, but contractors for these upcoming projects.
So how have we done that if we haven't had this position?
That's what I indicated. I've had to do that to working much longer hours, as well as the deputy, Alan, and others in the past, which as I indicated before, to the detriment sometimes of running the department.
Okay.
Not only doing capital, but we have maintenance and cleaning operations. So it's been a challenge.
All right.
Hi, Errol. And responding to Rich and his question, I think what you said was excellent. I was here when we had the engineering division, and we lost a lot when we don't have an engineering division anymore and put a lot more burden on the highway engineers and the facilities engineer. And you responded wonderfully, I think, of the health department project, for example, where you did it almost single-handedly. But inspections, as you put it, and other things are reasons that I think that we should seriously consider this over target that you're talking about. You're only human.
Okay. On that note, is there anything else? All right. Thank you, Errol. Our questions were as short and sweet as your presentation. And I learned something about our facilities department, and I appreciate that. So have a good evening.
You too. Thank you all.
Thank you. All right. So next we have weights and measures, and that would be Aaron Becker, right? Okay.
Good morning, good evening, I should say, everybody. How's everyone
right.
going? Yeah, let's see if I get my screen shared for you. Everybody see my screen?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you got it figured out. So here's my recommended budget for the year. There's $23,000 of the revenues based on an increase on a 7-year average, and $20,000 of that revenue for the year is going to be based on the sale of a department equipment, and it's going to be reallocated towards the procurement of the
Please speak up.
My apologies. The $23,000 is an increase on inspection revenue based on a 7-year average, which was before it was $22,775, and it fluctuates a little bit by the end of the year, plus or minus, but I end up getting on the revenue eventually anyway with following up with late notices and that nature. $104,721 is about the running operational expense for my department. The $15,046 is what's going to be OTR for office equipment, as well as the 150-gallon prover. And the 2019 to 2020, there was two full-time equivalents based on Skip still working as a director and me working under him as his inspector and trainee. And then this year and next year, of course, is just one FTE. And so here we're at our over-target requests. The 150-gallon prover is something that I wanted to prioritize because based on the cost of
Aaron, you're coming in and out of your voice. Are you right up to your microphone?
Can everybody hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So the 150-gallon prover is something that I wanted to prioritize because of the cost of heating fuels. And the thing about heating fuels is that you're not just buying maybe $50 worth of fuel that you're putting in your automotive tank. You're buying several $100 worth of fuel at a time. That's a big hit for just about anybody. And so when you can increase the volume of your testing container, that's going to give you a much more accurate test for the meter that's delivering this fuel to people's homes. And the other rollover for the $2,129, that's for LaserFISH scanner, for a new LaserFISH database that I have Katie Prince from IT working on for me, and a new 27-inch computer monitor, and hopefully a higher quality, more reliable office printer. That's pretty much about it. Does anybody have any questions?
Mike Lane.
I always ask this question, do you need more help?
Eventually, yes, because I have my database and still in the research and development stages right now, I think it would be advantageous to wait on hiring an inspector until I get all the bugs worked out of it. And as it turns out, tomorrow is going to be the first use of this for testing a gas station. So tomorrow I'm going to get a really good idea about it. But once I get all the bugs and kinks worked out of it, I do intend on applying for another FTE. I faded out again?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm about 18 inches away from my microphone. I don't know what's going on here. And I'm even speaking up.
Your microphone might be near your keyboard, at the top of your keyboard.
Yeah, I've actually got to lift it up so that it's more accessible to hear my voice. Unfortunately, it's not picking it up very well. I'll try and get real close. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah. Well, we heard you up until you said tomorrow you'd have a better idea.
Yeah, well, I have tomorrow is going to be the first test with this new database through LaserFISH, and we're going to figure out how the program is going to work. And then for next year, I plan on, of course, using it and doing my research and development to make sure all the kinks are worked out so that, that way I don't have to train a new inspector on something that's still being developed. Because that could be kind of confusing for them. So I don't want to have to teach them two ways of doing the same thing.
So do you expect that perhaps next year at this time you'll be coming to us with a request for additional staff?
Yes, that is the goal. I would like to have one inspector by 2023. And next year is going to be the finished portion of the research and development for my database.
Okay, well, we'll just look forward to that then.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it as well. I think it's going to be contributor to consumer protection.
Okay, great. Any other questions for Aaron? Okay, I think that's it. Thank you, Aaron. Have a good
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'll try and get something figured out with this microphone, everybody.
Okay. Alrighty, so now we will move on to the airport, and I see Roxanne is here.
I am.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. How are you?
We're doing fine, I think.
Thank you. Excellent. Okay, so is everybody seeing my screen okay?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so I'm going to just run through some achievements that the airport has seen, even though everything's happening with COVID. I just found out today we have some great news of additional flights that will be added. We've been waiting to hear on these. So in October, United is going to offer 4 flights a day, which is the most they've ever offered out of Ithaca. So that's promising for our budget in the future. And American is actually going to be using larger aircraft on both of their flights, which will offer 30 more seats per day out of our market. So fingers crossed that will continue on. We'll have to see. The FAA inspection, again, this year it went amazingly well. We had 0 discrepancies. Another positive is our fuel farm. It's generating a new source of non-airline revenue for Ithaca. So you'll notice probably in your budget book when you look at that, I'll explain that to you when I get to the actual budget portion. But we're probably going to generate an estimated $25,000 of revenue additional that we didn't have before, and it will increase as fuel sales increase. The airfield status, we haven't closed in at least 5 years, which is great. Airlines actually see that and keep an eye on that. And we also have to be thankful for our airline support through the pandemic. They remained with us. Even though United didn't service the airport, they continue to pay rent. So here's our recommended budget. Our budget usually stays pretty flat. We don't have a lot of changes due to the fact that a lot of it's salary and maintenance items that we have to continue to do. And I note, I had stated before, so on the budget sheet, you'll notice the big increase in highway fuel. That's because we're having to purchase additional fuel to be able to sell at the new fuel farm. But that's also showed as an increase in our commissions revenue. So it kind of offsets it there. Our full-time equivalents, they remain steady at 15, which can be tricky at times, running the airport with 15 staff, and we have to cover all commercial flights. So that can be, our staff starts at 4:30 in the morning and we run until midnight, but you know, any late flights they have to stay for. So scheduling can sometimes be a little crazy, but that's just where we're at right now. Federal funding. So this is something that was asked during an F&I meeting as well. So right now we've been promised, have received most of the actual grant offers for just over $5 million in federal funding. We had the CARES Act, which was the first round of funding with almost $2 million. The coronavirus response and relief was at about $1.5 million. And then the latest one is ARPA at about 1.9. There's a possible fourth stimulus package within the federal infrastructure bill. So hopefully we're going to get that as well. And we've heard that it could be anywhere between $6 and $8 million, which will truly help not only with our operating expenses, but we will look at using that to pay off some of the debt service. Another thing that has actually, you know, helped out, normally the airport is responsible for a 5% local share, which we usually use our PFCs to cover. But the FAA has covered all projects 100% for 2020 and 2021, which has been a savings, you know, from having to use the PFCs. And there's just the projects that we were doing in 2020 and 21. Some of our plans for 22, I actually have a meeting tomorrow with our airlines. We're working on getting the airline agreements up and running and signed. We began working on them pre-COVID, and obviously they were put on hold. So that's something that we're going to be focusing on probably through the last quarter of this year and may run into the first quarter of next year. The rental car agreement is due to expire in June of next year. So we're working on that as well. And possibly there will be additional revenue coming in, you know, from commissions on that. Increase in air service. That's a big one. I'm trying to get back to pre-pandemic to get our flights back up. But the news that we received today from United and American, it's great news. So that's a little bit something to look forward to, hopefully. And the UAI grant, the Upstate Airport Initiative grant that we have recently applied for, that'll go, you've probably seen some of that, but we're looking at, you know, expanding on the past grant that we received, solar canopy over the parking garage or parking lot, a transit e-bus storage facility, the CDL training facility. So that would be a huge help and also will help with the highway and a testing pad. So that'll be nice. ESO Flight Academy, we're redoing that next year, but also this will add possible electric trainers for flights. consolidated emergency operations facility, trauma transportation facility, and we're looking at just about over $25 million that we requested. So we will see what happens there. That's my presentation.
Questions? Shauna.
Hi, Roxanne. Thank you for the presentation. I have a few questions. I was wondering if you can tell us how the customs building is going and if that building and operations is operating in the black.
Sure. And it is not. With the, lack of travel, and domestic travel has been hard enough, but international travel has pretty much been non-existent. Right now, that's operating very much in the red. Hopefully, as things pick up and open back up, we'll start to see more international flights, which will truly help.
Can you tell us how much of the deficit we're looking at?
So that's, I believe, like around $150,000.
Okay. And how many travelers are coming in and out per week?
Commercially?
Yes.
Okay, so it just all depends on load factors. I have, for 2019, I compare June to June 2021. When we've had all three airlines, and we're down about 40% from June of 2019 to in June of 2021. So I wanted to compare the months with all three airlines operating. So my goal is over the next 4 months to track the numbers from all three airlines and compare them to 2019. So I'll have a better idea of where we stand.
Okay. And the $150,000, was that per year for the customs?
Correct. I think it was just like $154,000 is what we're anticipating for 2022, unless international travel opens.
Okay. Can you tell us what the fund balance is right now?
I believe we're just under $1 million, but that fluctuates as well on how it runs because it's a day-to-day thing based on cash flow as well.
Okay. And then my last question is, I understand that you're applying for a handful of grants, and many of those grants call for over $700,000 of passenger fees to be used. How would you assume that you might be receiving those passenger fees with a 40% decrease in people that are flying?
That's the tricky part. So we're looking at using the COVID relief funds to cover any shortfall at the time. We're going to end up after 2022. I have the figure here, about $1 million left. But again, that's an estimate so that we can use that for 2023. As far as the PFCs, again, we're hoping that passengers pick back up. We're also looking at legislation that's out there to increase the passenger facility charge. So that's another option. They're looking at doubling it from, currently it's $4.50 per passenger, and they're looking at doubling it to almost $9.
Okay. And then, I'm sorry, I have one more question.
Sure.
So I guess my concern is that we did bond this project, and there's debt service that we're also paying off. And we were going to use the passenger fees for that. I'm concerned because it seems like we're overextending ourselves with the airport.
So when this project came about and we began 2020, and this is a little tricky. So we were, during construction, we were 30% up in July of passengers. So we were looking very positive there. January and February of 2020, we were up 10% and 11% consecutively. So we weren't anticipating any issues at that time. Things were looking great. We were, things were looking up. That was one of our advertising campaigns. Things were moving, forward. So right now, it does look like it could be a little disconcerting. We just have to keep working and keep marketing and to increase our passenger loads. back up to pre-pandemic. And then I think that we should be, you know, safer, as well as increasing our non-airline revenues by using the fuel farm revenue, gaining revenue from that. We're looking at working with the Postal Service to see if they'll be able to fuel up. They're very interested. That'll increase revenue there. Multiple ways to look at other sources of revenue will also help.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, I have Mike and then Martha.
Hi, Roxanne, thanks. Heard in the news today that President Biden is going to allow air traffic from other countries where we have fully vaccinated travelers. That happens. Shouldn't that benefit our airport for international travels, whether it's
Absolutely.
Commercial or on the private side?
Absolutely. That'll help tremendously in both aspects, whether it be commercial or general aviation.
Well, hopefully that would eat into that 40% deficit that we have.
Yeah, the 40% is the unplanned commercial. So, you know, again, it was really tricky because we didn't have United start servicing us again this year until June and July. And it's hard to get a good comparison until you have all three airlines here. And another benefit will be the increased flights. Because right now, you know, we've tried to book flights out of here for trips, you know, that we've had to go on. And, you know, the flights have been full. So the demand is starting to increase, which is something I'm going to, you know, share with the airlines tomorrow. That, you know, demand is increasing, that, you know, flights coming back are a good thing. And hopefully that'll work in our favor.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, Martha. So, Roxanne, you said you were comparing June of 2021 with 2019, but did you just say that United wasn't flying yet?
United began back in June, so I was comparing June. They started June 1st in Ithaca, so I was comparing June to June to give us equal months of three airline operating.
Maybe July would be a better, you know, comparison if you had a whole, you know, a month, because people weren't booking the same day. If the flights weren't available, they weren't like booking
right.
yet. So United, you said they're going to do four flights a day. Is that to Dulles or is it Dulles and somewhere else?
Direct to Dulles. Yep. So United will be direct to Dulles. American is direct to Charlotte and Delta is direct to Detroit.
Okay. So that's four to Dulles and four back every day?
Correct. Yep.
Wow. That's a lot. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Anything else? Roxanne, I want to go back to the PFCs because I remember when we were talking about the initial airport grants that we were getting a couple of years ago. Mike frequently mentioned that he hoped or anticipated that the federal government would increase the PFCs. So now you mentioned that you think that that's possible. Is that based on some sort of information or something a trade group is sharing with you, or what's the story?
It's something that's been in the works for a long time, and I think it was closer to fruition before the pandemic. So I think they introduced it during the pandemic, which really wasn't
a good time.
Good time. Yeah, when everything else, you know, I mean, everybody's, you know, suffering and going through, you know, rough times, every department, every, you know, company. I think they're looking at reintroducing it. It's just in packaging it correctly for sale to the airlines as well as, you know, legislators. So, and again, we're hopeful. I think that would truly would help not having to cover it to cover some of the debt service with our non-airline revenues and other revenues would be very beneficial. But if need, you know, we've had to factor it into the budget in the past, you know, if we've had a large debt service that wasn't coverable by PFCs.
And when you say they're thinking about reintroducing it, who's the they?
Mike had sent me an email. I think it's just something that's, you know, in legislation in Washington.
Okay, thank you. Martha.
Oh, so you don't know if that's actually in the federal transportation bill or one of the...
I don't. I can check and I can get back to everybody on that.
Yeah, because I know if it's actually, you know, it might be in one in the big infrastructure bill.
Sure.
You mentioned the fuel farm revenue. Where would we find that in our pages here?
So the fuel farm revenue will be in your commissions.
In what?
41774 commissions. I don't know. I don't have that detail. Have that separated out is equal. So it's probably under your other revenues. I can give you a quick breakdown on that.
So other revenues is 1.5 million.
So the commissions, so the sale of the fuel, we are estimating about 220,000 in 2021. And of that, that's non-airports, about 169,000. So if we look at the difference between the revenue and the commissions and what we're going to gain commission on, because we don't gain commission on our use of the fuel, because we purchase all the fuel. So we've had to increase our expense line to cover the extra cost of the fuel that we buy. And the non-airport revenue we'll gain is about 25,000 in 2021. So that's what we were estimating for 2022.
I don't think it's broken out in our book.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not.
Commissions is not.
Right, I can send you that breakout as well if you'd like, and what's under our commissions to give you more details.
All right, thank you very much.
Yep. Okay, anybody else? Okay, Roxanne, you're free to fly.
Excellent.
Okay.
Have you been saving that one up?
No. Thanks very much for coming.
Thank you.
And thank everybody for attending. Tonight's a full moon. I think that everyone was very well behaved. All right. We're done.